And now it's time for our second speaker of the evening. I'd like to introduce to you Joe A. from Houston, Texas.
Thank you very much. My name's Joe, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I always like to read something to start with from the literature, and I'd like to read from the meditation book for today, from January 4th. To be alive is power. Existence in itself without a further function, omnipotent enough, Emily Dickinson. I am alive. I can make of that fact anything I want. I need no terms or conditions to exercise the power of life. All I have to do is live now. It is enough. There may be life in the future, and there was certainly life in the past, but my footing is in the present. Today is where the past has its meaning and where the future is shaped. Looking far forward, mapping out my life in the future, I waste the power of the present. And lingering in the past, twisting its circumstances and falsifying its memory, is an injustice to both past and present. I am thankful that my past has brought me to this present, where I'm learning to use all my energy and spirit to live. For today, I revel in the power of being alive, and I thank God that I am not afraid to exercise it to the fullest today. You know, this may surprise some of you, but I came from a dysfunctional family of the worst kind. And, you know, I often, as a friend of mine used to say, I think that Father Knows Best ought to be sued for false advertising. So, you know, that was kind of, you know, I watched Father Knows Best every week, and somehow my dad, who was a rager, was not like that. And, you know, and it just kind of, what is wrong with me? I would like to read for you my autobiography. Now, this is something I found about 3 years into the program. It was written when I was, think I was about 10 years old or 11 years old. And thank God Mrs. Cole had us write an autobiography of the future. And it says, my autobiography. My life started as any other life did in, and I meant hospital room, but I wrote hospitality room, which may have been true. On October 6, 1944, I was at the second son to Mr. and Mrs. Tyaker. My family includes my brother, Tommy, who was 15, my mother and father and dog and parakeet. When I was 3 years old, we took a trip to California and a trip to New York when I was 4. In 1949, I started my own bank account. I put in $4.28, about what I have today in my account. In 1949, I started school at Linwood. In 1951, we got us a boxer pup and named him Rusty. In 1953, we got us a parakeet and we named him Dinky. In 1956, I was promoted to Taft Junior High, where I studied art for 2 years. In 1959, I was promoted to Northwest Classen. In 1963, I graduated from Northwest Classen and went to college for 4 years. In 1965, I was married. In 1966, my wife had twins. Then I studied to be a preacher. Then I preached at Linwood Methodist Church, where I went, the church I went to as a boy. In 1979, the church needed a new room, so I won $25,000 on Name That Tune. Then in 19, I can't read the date, was a preacher on the spaceship Colleen, where I wrote to the first spaceship to Mars, where I wrote the story, the book, Something of Life. Then in 1985, I was the first preacher on Mars. In 1990, I wrote the story of my life called The Oklahoma Boy. My life didn't turn out that way. I was very thin as a kid, and I was probably weighed about 70 pounds up until till I was 13 years old. And when I was 13 years old, my grandmother died, and she was my emotional sexual abuser. I had been sleeping with her every night in bed so that I could watch her and grandpa in the house next 2 hours. When she died, I didn't know what to do because I kept staying in the same bed. And one night when I was up to about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I called my mother, and she said, well, go to the kitchen, get some cookies and milk. I went to the kitchen, I got a lot of cookies and a lot of milk, and I went from about 70 pounds in 2.5 to 3 years to over 300 pounds. I ate my feelings away, And that's what I tried to do for the rest of my life. And, you know, it was an up and down thing. The only time I lost weight was on drugs. When I was, after I had gained all that weight of 325 pounds or so, the doctor, a friend of mine, started giving me little black and white pills called black and white mollies today. And, you know, he just gave me as many as I wanted. And, you know, if one was good, three were better. And I lost a lot of weight, and I was thin. And I thought I would feel different, and I felt no different than I did when I was fat. And that continued all the way through the Army. I lost a lot of weight just before I went in the Army. I came back out of the Army. I gained it all back. I lost it. I gained it back. I lost it. I gained it back. In 1978, I had moved to Houston. 1976, I had moved to Houston. And I went to work for a man. I'm an artist photographer. And I was back up to, I wasn't at my top weight. I was only about 272 pounds. And so I went on a diet, and I went from 172 pounds down to 141 pounds in 9 months. And my diet consisted of a bowl of vegetable soup and a glass of iced tea for lunch. Had it at the same restaurant. Whatever restaurant I went to, to the restaurant I went, they had it sitting there waiting for me when I came into the cafe. And then I would have a very heavy dinner of 35 to 50 milligrams of Valium, dropped in three or four scotches. And that's all I had for 9 months. I lost a lot of weight. One of the employees at where I worked said I had a complete psychic change. Not quite what the doctor's opinion talks about. And so, you know, that was my life. And after I went on that diet, immediately after about 3 months, I started gaining weight again. I couldn't deal with, as Ida was talking about, the shame, the guilt, the fear, the anger that came up for me. And I just was on a course where in February of 1983, I was waking up in the morning, you know, that time when you're half awake and you're half asleep. And I was thinking about doing one. I thought of two things. One morning, one the next, is I would either say the Lord's Prayer, which by that time I was an atheist agnostic, or I would think about getting the gun out of the drawer and shooting myself in the head, because I thought that there was no solution. And so what I did was I started going to a course of self-destruction. I bought a building with two people who were in AA in February of 1983, and I think that after about 2 weeks, they knew they had three choices. They had been sober 6 years, but they knew that one, either had to get me in a 12-step program, sell the building at a great loss, or drink. Because I, as Beverly, one of the women said, I used to come in like a tornado, and I left like a hurricane. And I just left a lot of wreckage in the past. I was very vicious. I could learn how to spot within about 10 seconds your weakest points. I would stab you in the back, twist the knife, pull it out, and laugh as I left the room. You know, I was not a very nice person. I didn't think that it would work for me. Only drugs worked. Only drugs worked. In May of 1983, I was driving along in Houston, going to do something again that I wasn't able to say that longest word in the English language, no. And I was doing something that I didn't want to do. Once again. And I was really I was at the lowest point in my life. And I was driving along, and I hit a car on the freeway at about 70 miles an hour. And I walked away from it. Two things were a miracle. I walked away from it. One is an elderly lady, probably my age now, was standing in front of the car 5 minutes before. If I'd been 5 minutes earlier, I would have killed her. And I said for several years that there were cars on the road, but there weren't any cars. I think that at that moment, I just wanted to die. And I thought that that was the easiest way to do it. I just wanted to die. I went to the doctor on Monday. I'd had a physical a few weeks before, and he said, you really need to lose weight. I wasn't at my top. I was only back up to 260 pounds or so. And he said, but you really need to lose the weight. And he said, the only reason you weren't hurt in the operation, in the car wreck, is because you're so fat. And I remember the room. I remember what it was like, where I was sitting. And I said to him, I've been thinking about going to Overeaters Anonymous. Where that came from, why I said it, I will never know. But they had been 12-stepping me into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous by saying that many of their friends had gone there and they'd lost a lot of weight. I went home and I asked the two people to take me to my first meeting. I went to my first meeting on a Friday night and before Memorial Day weekend of 1983. And I heard some things in that room that were to change my life. One was I heard that there was a solution to the way that I felt. I heard my story being told, and some of you may know Terrell. Terrell was at that meeting from California, and he told my story. And, you know, I heard it. I heard it. I sat in the back of the room, but I heard it. Actually, the two people that brought me to my meeting sat on either side of me. I think they were afraid I was going to jump out and run out of the room, and they were going to grab me if I did. But I went. I heard that there was a solution. Two was I heard that you're only as sick as your secrets. And three is I heard you eat three meals a day, nothing in between, and you don't eat sugar. And so I went home that night and I read some books, and I met with the two people that took me to my first meeting. And I said to one of them, I asked them a couple of questions, you know, do I need to go to more than one meeting a week? They said it might be a good idea. And I said, you know, you sure this isn't a cult like the Moonies? There seemed to be a lot of chanting and praying in that meeting. And they said, no, it's not a cult, Joe. It's not a cult. And, you know, I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to remember the longest prayer that they said in that meeting. I just, to me at that point, you know, it was, the Serenity Prayer seemed like it was 12 pages long. And, you know, and, you know, I was a grazer. You know, I only ate one meal a day. It started at 10:30 at the Haagen-Dazs store. I ate three dips of ice cream, and then I would eat solid until 1:30 at night when I ate a Jack in the Box, terrible food. And then I would go home and have a half a bottle of Drambuie after trying to find love in all the wrong places. And so I was a grazer, and I thought, eating three meals a day, eating breakfast, I'm going to get fatter. But I thought I'd give it a try. It was Memorial Day weekend of 1983. I went to a family reunion, which was probably not the best way to start your first day of abstinence. But I went to it. I made the mistake of telling them I was on a diet. And they all weekend said, Joe, can we make you something special? Joe, can you sure you can eat this? We can't make that. Joe can't eat it. And, you know, that was typical of my family. But at the end, on Monday, when I left that meeting, I had three meals a day, nothing in between, and I hadn't had anything with sugar. Since that weekend in 1983, I've had three meals a day, nothing in between, no sugar, and about a month later, no flour or bread or and that type of thing. And thanks, as Ida mentioned, it has never been perfect. It has never been perfect. When I flew to Australia, I just ate the meals when they served them, and it may have been four meals a day, it may have been five meals on that 24-hour flight, but I just ate it. I started losing weight rather quickly. I was like Ida, I lost a lot of weight very quickly. And, you know, the weekend that I spent with my family and didn't overeat, I think, is when I took the second step. I took the third step about 2 weeks later, or 3 weeks or 4 weeks later. I got a sponsor, my third meeting. About 2 weeks later, I knew I needed to get rid of my deepest, darkest secret. And I knew that I needed to tell the two people that brought me into the rooms my deepest, darkest secret. We went to lunch. I was going to tell them over lunch. Found out later after some inventories that I said, told everybody everything over lunch or dinner. But I couldn't do it. I was just too afraid. I lived in a world of fear. Fear, anger, guilt, and shame. And so what it was, we were coming back and we were talking about the building, and I said, I almost didn't buy the building. And they said, why? And I said, because I'm gay. And Beverly turns to me and said, we know, we still love you. That was when I took the third step. That was the moment in which I decided that no matter what happened, I was going to be the true Joe. And I wasn't going to hide from anyone or anything in who I was. So I took the third step. I got a sponsor right away. I started on the fourth step. I got on the fourth step right away, and it took me about 6 months. I was traveling a lot, going all over the country. I would go to one trip. I went to to Houston, to New York, to L.A., back to New York, to Chicago, and then back to Houston on planes. I will have to say that before this pandemic in 2019, before this program in 2019, I had eaten every meal out at a restaurant. I maybe cooked at home one time. What I did was I looked at the menu, found what I could get, which was a reduced portion of meat and two vegetables, and that's what I made my dinner. Even today, when I have friends that are foodies, when they go out to eat, I look at the menu where we're going, and I pick something that's on my plan of eating. Sometimes they've been bigger, sometimes they've been smaller. But, you know, and also, too, I lost a lot of weight coming into this program, and I became anorexic. I had to be thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. And I got down, I was eating very unhealthy, and I had got down to a very low weight, which was unhealthy. And that was at the point where I had to do the thing that was the hardest thing to do in Overeaters Anonymous. I had to gain weight. And I had to make my goal weight what I weigh today if I'm eating healthy for my body. And that means that if I'm overweight, I'm eating to come it down to a healthy weight. If I'm underweight, I'm coming up to eat to be at a healthy weight. And I'm not saying thin, I'm saying healthy weight. And so, you know, that's what I had to do with my abstinence and my plan of eating. The fourth step I finished, I gave it to a man in AA because I was sober by that time. I've been sober since October of 83. And he was a spiritual guru, and he had a lot of good things to say, especially about me being molested by my uncle when I was 11 years old. I came off at a high. I have never felt so good in my life. I had gotten rid of my secrets. I was free of the past. I think the steps allow me to become neutral with the past, which is what the most important thing is. The problem was that man went out 3 months later and molested an 11-year-old boy. And the anger that came up within me was so great that I almost ate and drank over it. What I did instead was I went back and I reworked my fourth and fifth step. I reworked my fourth and fifth step. I gave it to my sponsor. And again, I came away with that high. Six and seven, I'm still working on 39 years later. Step six for me is about not doing the things that I want to do. And step seven is doing the things I don't want to do, especially in relationships. You know, I can be very vicious still, but I try not to do that today. When I came into the program, I had been in the program 7.5 years. I had three people that I knew in Houston. Today, I know people all over the world. I did 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. What I'd like to talk about now is something that I got from Roseanne. And that was what the program gives me. And I think a lot of people mentioned it in the little video that you had. But before the program, I was never able to follow my dreams. I was never able to follow my dreams. It came from being having to be perfect. I'm not going to do it if I'm not perfect. You know, it's not perfect. I throw it away. I'm an artist. I'm an architectural photographer artist. I've done work all over the world in my field. I've done with the most of the major architects in the United States. You know, I'm an artist that has work in museums and in galleries. And that would have never been possible without the program of Overeaters Anonymous. What it allowed me to do was it allowed me to not have to be perfect. It allowed me to not have to be perfect in my plan of eating, in my abstinence, the way that I deal with people. It allowed me to follow my dreams. Roseanne talks about, and you know, that she has the dreams for Overeaters Anonymous, which was a worldwide organization. You know, she was able to follow that dream because of her abstinence and her participation in Overeaters Anonymous. Roseanne also was a perfect founder. Bill Wilson never drank again. I understand that Bob Smith, Dr. Bob, had one drink and then went back to the program. Roseanne was our perfect founder. Roseanne's last abstinence in this program was, and someone may correct me, around 1985 or 86. She told me when I was discussing it with her when I was on the board of trustees, she said, you know, Joe, I was at the heaviest I ever was in Overeaters Anonymous. But what I kept doing was I kept coming back. I kept coming back. I might sit in the back of the room in my heavy pea jacket wrapped around me hiding, but I kept coming back. That's the message, I think, the most important message that Roseanne ever gave me was you just keep coming back no matter what. Anyone that has over 30 years, thank you, 5 minutes? Yeah. Has over 30 years knows that we have seen hundreds of thousands of people come through our doors. If they had only stuck around, we would be much larger. But it's a very, very hard program. I work 3 different programs that deal with my food, my alcohol, drugs, and my sex addiction. I did anything to not feel. And what it was it actually was easier for me to give up the sexual addiction and the alcohol addiction and drug addiction than it was the food. Because the food was my first addiction. It was the first thing when I was a 13-year-old and I didn't want to feel about my grandmother's death. My mother said, eat some cookies and drink some milk. And I started on that trip. We were a large family. On holidays, we would have anywhere from 75 to 100 people at our family dinners till the big fight. And then we had about 50. And, there would be enough food for 500 people. And most of it would be gone by the time the day's over. The way that women showed love in my family was they cooked food. The way the men showed their love for the women in the family is they ate the food. And, you know, after Christmas or dinner, the men would drink beer and play poker, and the women would eat the desserts along with the kids. And that was what our family was about, you know. One time I had Thanksgiving dinners at my house for people who didn't have a place to go or didn't want to go where they were supposed to go. And, you know, I mentioned that someone brought a sugar-free, gluten-free pumpkin pie. And my mother said, oh, get me the recipe. I'll make you 2 or 3 of them. And that was the kind of way that my mother showed love, was to make food. The first thing we did when we sat at dinner before she died was, and the dishes would come, she would say, would you take some of mine, Joe, please? That was the only way that she knew to say, I love you. I had to learn how to love and forgive my dad, who was a rager. I did it by starting to hug him when I came into the program and telling him I love you. He did nothing. He just had arms at his side. I kept that up for about 6 months. After about 6 months, he put an arm around me. About 6 months later, he put both arms around me. About a year later, he went and hugged me first. You know, I was in the process of forgiving him, and I was letting him know that I wanted his love. I was there for when he died. I had to take him off a ventilator. I was there for my mother when she died, and I had to take her off a ventilator. I was a good son, and I was to both of them. I think one of the moments that I cherished more than anything was when we had phone calls with my dad, mother, and dad. I would always end with, I love you. And I would always say that. And a towering moment for me was the first time before I said it, my dad said, I love you. It's these kind of moments with my family, with my friends, and everybody else. My dreams of becoming an artist who was recognized for his work. My dreams of having a family that extends far beyond my family of origin. These are the types of dreams that come true if, as Roseanne said, you just keep coming back. That's the secret to Overeaters Anonymous. Oh, and working the 12 steps, too, on a regular basis. Living the 12 steps, I really think, today. So, you know, it is. My life is so much better because of Overeaters Anonymous. I could not have the joy, the freedom, and the serenity that I have. Now, it is my life before was like the biggest roller coaster in the world. They would go up and come down and go up and come down. Today, my roller coaster is more like the kids' one. It goes like this. You know, there are high moments and low moments and everything else. And, you know, I just go on. And as Edith said, I just say, this too shall pass. I suffer from chronic depression, and I fight it all the time. And, you know, I'm like Bill Wilson. Wilson, if you don't know, if you'll Google a letter of his called, if you just Google Bill Wilson emotional sobriety letter, it's an amazing letter. And he talks about his own clinical depression. So my dreams have come through today. I'm still dreaming, and I'm still doing. I started a sculpture class last week. I've been taking one for 2 years. I'm in a whole new branch of service. You know, at 77, I am trying to teach an old dog new tricks, and I'm trying to learn more and more and more. So, you know, I appreciate everyone asking me to speak tonight. I will say this. I always like to end my meetings with this. In AA, they say, even if your ass is falling off, don't drink. Even if your ass is falling off, don't drink. I like to say in Overeaters Anonymous, even if your ass is falling off, don't overeat. Don't overeat. And if you don't overeat, more than likely your ass will fall off. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.